This episode of Metatrex is brought to you by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
There's no greater challenge than the study of philosophy.
My philosophy is that there is room for all philosophies on this station.
Well, welcome everyone to episode 52 of Metatrex, Trek FM's show on Star Trek and philosophy. My name is Mike Morrison, and with me, as he always is Zachary Fruling. Today we're going to be discussing our top picks for essential Trek philosophy from season 3 of Enterprise. Zachary, it's been a couple of weeks since we've been able to do this. How are things going?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to finally sitting down and talking some Star Trek after a couple of weeks of life getting in the way of this.
I know, indeed. And I should mention that this is the last podcast that we'll be doing for 2016. And I thought before we dive into our essential picks from season 3 of Enterprise, we'd talk a little bit about the year that was, 2016, and how our fandom has been affected by all the things going on. It's kind of a retrospective of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek and everything that's going on in the franchise these days.
Well, Mike, as I look back on 2016, I think of this as a year of big ups and big downs. Some of the big ups include, obviously, things like seeing the success of Metatrex here on Trek FM. This has been one of my most creative years in a lot of ways, whether it's working on the podcast, whether it's working on an app that I was working on. But it's also been a year of big disappointments and big challenges. I lost a job that I'd been with for a long time and cycled through a couple jobs after that. Now I finally settled at a place that I'm very happy. And sadly, in the latter part of this year, we had to put down 3 pets in the last 3 months. So it's been a very sad couple months here around the household. So, we've said this a few times, but getting together once a week to talk about Star Trek and just decompress and be friends together and talk about something we love. And it's a good relief from the ups and downs of day-to-day life. And it's definitely on the upside. So I'm always pleased to sit down to be able to do this. And as a way of wrapping up 2016, I just want to say that from both of us and from everyone at Trek FM, that regardless of where you're at in life and what big ups and big downs and challenges and rewards you've had over this last year, that we're with you. We're all one big Trek FM family, and we hope everyone has a really nice holiday season, and hopefully 2017 will be even better for you than 2016.
Absolutely. I know for me, Zachary, I think about 2016, the year that was. This was a big year for the franchise, for Star Trek, you know, that we celebrated the 50th anniversary, and I recall having participated in a Patrons Roundtable a year ago when we were looking forward to 2016, and I was talking about some of the things that I wanted to see as a fan for an observance of the 50th anniversary. And many of the things that I talked about then have had come to fruition. I very much wanted to see, some special documentaries happen. And we certainly saw that. There have been multitudes of appearances as various cast members from various iterations of Star Trek have made their way around television talk shows, and the History Channel put together a great documentary. For the Love of Spock came out this year, which I can't say enough good about Adam Nimoy's retrospective of his father and Spock and the impact that they've had on pop culture. A fabulous piece that was done there.
Very, and of course, it was a very touching documentary.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. And I think about Beyond, despite the fact that everybody's talking about the disappointment at the box office, I really felt like it was a home run, really, in many ways for the new Star Trek Kelvin Timeline franchise. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they offer up in the next movie. And I haven't been able to say that up until Beyond came out. I was cautiously optimistic going into it, and now I'm waiting with bated breath for whatever is beyond. And then, of course, we're all looking forward to the new Star Trek series that will be airing on CBS All Access next year, Star Trek Discovery. Very much looking forward to that. And I know that there are some mixed feelings, Zachary. I know that this was the year that a lot of fans felt that CBS had really injured them in many ways with the lawsuit, the Axanar lawsuit. And then, of course, everyone who was looking forward to Brian Fuller being the showrunner for Star Trek Discovery, and now that he is not going to be serving in that role. I know a lot of fans have been injured in many ways by that. And I personally know fans who in some ways have been turned off by those events. And I just want to say that I continue to look forward optimistically at where Star Trek is going and where fandom is going to go over the course of the next several months as we wait for Star Trek Discovery. So I'm optimistic looking forward, like you, on a personal level. You know, this has been a year, I call this the year of change. It's been in many ways a difficult year, and I'm looking forward to putting this one to bed, and I'm looking forward to 2017 for sure. And hopefully in many respects, it will be, a much more positive year. But as far as Star Trek is concerned, I think the 50th anniversary was pretty much what I expected. And I think they've set the franchise up for more success in the future.
I really think it's a great time to be a Star Trek fan. You know, over this year, we saw the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. We saw a new Star Trek movie. We have a viable, healthy movie franchise. We have a brand new Star Trek TV show coming in 2017. In fact, if you're a fan of any number of different franchises, whether it's Star Wars or, in my case, something crazy like Mystery Science Theater 3000 and, of course, Star Trek, there's new stuff coming out for all of these franchises. And in my mind, what matters more than any individual hit or miss, you know, whether Beyond was successful or not successful, whether it was profitable or not profitable, whether people like Discovery and it meets their expectations or it doesn't, what matters in my mind is the long-term health of the franchise, the ability to keep trotting out characters and situations in the Star Trek universe. Some of them are going to be hits and some of them are going to be misses. But what matters is the health of the franchise as a whole, that no matter what happens, we keep doing another one and we keep our optimism and keep having a message to say about what mankind's role can be in the future. You know, time is marching on. You know, we're all older than we used to be. We're a year older than we were a year ago when we started Metatrex, right? Hopefully we're wiser. And as time marches on, I hope that Star Trek continues to serve in that guiding light capacity to light the way for what mankind could be at our best in the future.
Without a doubt. Our good friend Larry Nemechek often referred to these past several years as the fallow years. And listen, fans, the fallow years are over, and we've got a thriving movie franchise. Absolutely. We've got a series coming. And quite frankly, I don't know that we'll ever return to what many people consider the golden period of Star Trek, you know, of the 90s when we had three series. I don't think we'll return to that necessarily. But, you know, I look at some of the other franchises, the DC franchise, the Marvel franchise, and I see, you know, that they're just churning out episode after episode, and they're introducing new characters and you know, bringing new pieces of those franchises into into the fold. And I don't know, you know, maybe we will see multiple vignettes of Star Trek. Maybe we'll discover or explore rather other areas of the Star Trek universe. I would love to see a Klingon series come out where we're really focused on the Klingon Empire and the inner workings of the Empire, and we get to see things a little bit more from their perspective. How cool would that be? And I really think that things are really falling into place nicely for 2017. And I think you used the operative word there, Zachary. You said, optimism!
Optimism!
that's my general feel.
I actually really like what the Star Wars franchise is doing in terms of having the main storyline Star Wars movies, and that now they're doing one-off Star Wars movies. I could see that being an interesting model for Star Trek as well, where we have the major Star Trek movies being focused on very familiar subject matter and territory for Star Trek, and having one-off stories that do tell a Romulan story or a Klingon story or a story about an individual character, something we haven't thought of yet even. It's an interesting model, but that takes a willingness to plunk down cash and make more movies. So.
As a Star Trek fan, I'm just saying, CBS, if you're listening, there are lots of fans out there who would love to see something very, very similar for the Star Trek franchise that we're seeing with, as you mentioned, the Star Wars franchise, Marvel, DC. That model is thriving out there right now, and fans are really sucking the cash into those right now. And there are a lot of Star Trek fans who are hungry for new Star Trek. And we're waiting. Come take our money.
See, now I'm just kind of picturing a superhero Star Trek mashup. You know, like rather than Superman with one S, we get two S's like Super Spock.
We have now dipped into the cheese.
With a cape listeners. And the ears and the, you know, double S logo on the chest.
Well, Zachary, it's been fun with this little retrospective, but we do have a essential Trek philosophy to get into.
Oh, were we supposed to talk about philosophy today?
We're going to talk about philosophy. Sure, That's what we do here on MetaTreks.
We can do that, I guess.
So, Zachary, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with our essential Trek philosophy, we have been doing this about every four episodes of MetaTreks. We take on a season of Star Trek. We've been going in reverse order. We started this with the fourth season of Enterprise, and we've moved through the final season of each and every Star Trek franchise, including the animated series. And we are now full circle back to Enterprise, and we're going to be taking on season 3. Now, we haven't shared our lists. Listeners, I don't know what Zachary's list is. He doesn't know what my list is. And so sometimes we have duplicates, and that's okay.
I would put money on the fact that E squared is on your list, though.
And I would.
After 52 episodes of MetaTreks, I know you pretty well at this point. I'm guessing E squared is on your list.
Well, I know what we're preparing for our next episode, so I would be willing to bet that it was somewhere on your list as well. Whether it made the final cut or not, I'm willing to bet it was in there somewhere.
You'll have to wait and see.
So we have three essential Trek philosophy episodes from the third season of Enterprise each, and some honorable mentions as well. And so, Zachary, you want to start with any initial thoughts on the third season of Enterprise and give us your first pick?
Yeah, I've got to say that season 3 of Enterprise was easy on the one hand and a challenge on the other to come up with this list of essential Trek philosophy episodes from season 3 of Enterprise. It was easy because I think there's so much material inside this season. My list here is actually a longer list than I've been able to come up with for almost every season of essential Trek philosophy that we've done so far. On the other hand, it's also the season of Star Trek that I'm probably least familiar with out of almost everything in Star Trek. And that's because the Zindi arc really didn't resonate with me at the time. And frankly, it still really doesn't resonate with me very much. So it's not something I go back to again and again and again, although there are a lot of episodes, one-off episodes in this season that I do like. It was something I really had to kind of drill down and go, what happens in this season? And remind myself of the good things in this series in this season. So I kind of surprised myself. I was surprised that I came up with as long of a list as I did, given how short my list was for season 4 of Enterprise just a few weeks ago. So before we dive in to compare our picks, we just want to remind our listeners that when we do an episode of Essential Trek Philosophy, we're not trying to do a deep dive into the philosophical content in these episodes. Our goal is to provide an overview of the season as a whole, trying to identify which episodes you should go to if you're looking for interesting philosophical content. And if you want a deeper dive into any of these episodes, you can look back on our previous episodes of MetaTreks to see if we've covered these particular episodes or these particular philosophical topics. Or if there's one you really want to hear more about, let us know and we'll do an episode on that topic. So that being said, let's dive in and start comparing our picks. My first pick for Essential Trek Philosophy from Season 3 of Enterprise is Episode 10, Similitude. Now, was that on your list, Mike?
It was indeed.
I figured it might be. This is one of the obvious choices, the low-hanging fruit in Season 3 of Enterprise. So Similitude, if you remember, this is an episode where we get to see a mimetic duplicate of Commander Tucker. And this is very reminiscent of, say, the episode Tuvix in Voyager, where we have two beings, one of which has to live in order to save the other. And it raises issues of personal identity. You know, we have these two beings that are ostensibly, you know, physical duplicates of each other. The mimetic duplicate of Commander Tucker starts to recollect his memories and whatnot. And then it raises the question, well, if he has all of his memories and it's an exact physical duplicate, isn't it just Commander Tucker? What's the actual difference at that point? So very interesting issues of personal identity. And of course, it raises the ethical issue of when it's okay to sacrifice one being to save another.
Yeah, this was on my list as well. You referred to it as low-hanging fruit. I just want to say that I believe that this is one of the best episodes of Star Trek, period. It really is. And I definitely see the parallels to Tuvix from Voyager. There's some considerable differences here as well. And one of the things that I really appreciate is kind of the ethical struggle that Jonathan Archer is faced with. In fact, he says at one point in a conversation with T'Pol that he's aware of the ethical implications. He said, if we weren't in the expanse, maybe my decision would be different, but we've got to complete the mission. Earth needs Enterprise. Enterprise needs Trip. It's as simple as that. And I really appreciate how Captain Archer is able to bring this down to very simple terms. And what is really a very complex ethical conundrum in many respects, he pares down into something very simple, very practical. Earth needs Enterprise, Enterprise needs Trip. And he's as simple as that. And I appreciate the fact that he said, if we weren't in the expanse, perhaps my decision would have been different. So even he recognizes that this decision to make this mimetic clone is probably not the best thing, but he feels that his options are extremely limited. And I really appreciate how the character of Sim was able to build his own relationships. I think that there's really, in many respects, he was Trip, but in many respects, he was his own character. And I appreciate that exploration as well. I think it raises some really interesting philosophical questions. On a lighter side, I love the scene at the end when he goes into sick bay and he tells Phlox, you were a damn good father. And Phlox says, you were a damn fine son. I get choked up every time I see that, Zach.
Well, Mike, you hit on an interesting point, and I think this is true of Season 3 of Enterprise in general. What Season 3 does, I think with these ethical dilemmas we're going to talk about, is it takes dilemmas that could be an isolated case where your intuitions might be drawn a certain direction, and by placing those dilemmas within the context of the overall Zindi arc, where the stakes are very high for Earth, then that draws our intuition in a very different direction. Things that look like they might be morally questionable become more acceptable when you look at them in a consequentialist light, when you look at them from the perspective of on a planetary scale or on a galactic scale. Think of the lives we need to save, as a whole mass of millions of people's lives, right? That makes it okay if you adopt the consequentialist standpoint to do things that would normally not be considered morally acceptable in an isolated instance, apart from that overall Zindi arc. So I like that Season 3 of Enterprise puts this very galactic spin on all of these moral and ethical conundrums that you get inside that season. It draws our intuitions a different direction than if this were a one-off. Say, if this episode had been done as a one-off standalone episode in Star Trek The Next Generation, I think you'd have a very different kind of episode with a captain making very different judgments than you would make than Archer has to make in Season 3 of Enterprise.
So who would we clone on the Enterprise D, that is?
Can I say that I'll take two Dr. Crushers, please? Is that acceptable to say on the podcast?
Two Dr. Crushers, please.
Straight up.
I was going to say, I don't think it would be a good idea to clone Riker. We did that, actually, and it didn't turn out really well. So three Rikers in the galaxy, definitely not enough room for three Rikers in the galaxy.
And Data duplicates don't work out very well either, frankly.
No, they really don't. They really
and
don't.
And in Nemesis, we get to see a Picard duplicate. Same thing, mm-hmm. not a good situation. So we haven't yeah. seen a duplicate Dr. Crusher, a duplicate Counselor Troi, so I'm putting my money there.
No duplicate Geordis either, so that's an option as well. Zachary, on a little bit more serious note, I didn't have an opportunity because, as we suspected, we had some duplicates here. Speaking of duplicates, one on my list, one on your list, the same episode similitude. I didn't really get to share any initial thoughts on the third season of Enterprise. And as I was thinking about this when we were rolling around to doing this Essential Trek philosophy, I have to say that I know the third season of Enterprise is not necessarily a fan favorite. There are a lot of fans out there who, like you, this storyline didn't really resonate with at the time, nor looking back on it. And I'm probably polar opposite in terms of how I look at this. I very much appreciate the Zindi arc. I'll be the first person to admit that it can be difficult sometimes to watch because it seems a little bit disjointed, especially once you get to about the halfway point. It's extremely disjointed. And of course, once again, our good friend Larry Nemechek has shed some light on that as he's talked about Enterprise both on the Ready Room and around the network. And we know that they had some writing issues about midway through the season, not sure, you know, what they were going to do as far as the arc was concerned. They kind of just were flying by the seat of their pants. We know that, and we see that reflected in the flow of the Zindi arc. But that being said, I think that this particular season of Star Trek Enterprise was really cutting edge at the time, because we weren't really telling these kinds of, you know, large arc stories. It's commonplace now. Just about every streaming series on Netflix, Hulu, and, you know, various streaming services tell these kinds of stories.
Yeah, it's the binge-watching phenomenon.
Yes,
people want to
absolutely.
Watch episode after episode after episode,
yeah.
Absolutely.
They take 13 episodes and they tell one story. And in many respects, you know, this is almost 10 years ago that we were doing this. And so I really see this as cutting edge. And yes, just like, you know, every new thing, there were some problems. There were some, you know, there were some kinks in it. And I really don't let that disturb the fact that I think they told some very good stories. I think the overall arc, for me, was a good one. It was timely in some ways, because at the end of the day, this is a post 9/11 story about a terror attack on Earth. And so we go out there into the expanse to really, in many respects, stop them at all costs. And the attitude going into the expanse was, we're going to do whatever it takes to stop them. And we all know what that means. We're going to, you know, we're going to fire missiles. We're going to fire phasers. This is a military action. In fact, we introduce the Makos in season 3 of Enterprise. So we're going out. It's a military operation. But somewhere about the halfway point, this ceased to be a military mission and it became a diplomatic mission. What a great story overall, I think it told. That at the end of the day, even though we had to, you know, there was some kick butt action in the final episode 0 hour of this arc, at the end of the day, it really was diplomacy that won. And I can't think of anything more Star Trek than that.
Mike, you make an excellent point about the storytelling in this season 3 Zindi arc as it relates to events in the real world. I think as we get farther and farther away from September 11th, we run the risk of forgetting what people's mindset was shortly after September 11th mm-hmm. and the state of frankly, panic and concern and angst and anxiety that led to things like the Iraq War and whatnot. And, you know, the Zindi arc is a direct parallel for what was going on at the time. And if you weren't clued into that, and I think, as we get further and further, people have to remind themselves that this is really a result of a very specific event in our real world history now, what used to be current events that is now creeping up on being history. And, you know, frankly, Enterprise does a spectacular job of being relevant to the real world at that time period, given those events. And again, you know, that doesn't mean that it's going to be my favorite season of Star Trek. It doesn't resonate with me for a lot of other reasons. But insofar as I'm a little critical of season three from a storytelling standpoint, I don't want people to forget how incredibly relevant it was to the real world shortly after September 11th.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, Zachary, as we duplicated similitude, I'll go with my second choice, and that is episode 12 of season 3, Chosen Realm. Again, this is one of those really great science versus religion kind of explorations, and, you know, hermeneutics, I think, plays a big role in this episode. You know, our crew has encountered a religious order that at first seems very peaceful, and everything seems to indicate that this is going to be a friendly first contact, but that's not going to be the case. And the religious order that they've picked up are very bent on using the advanced weaponry of Enterprise in order to exact some type of military operation against a rival faction from their own home world. I think it's a really fascinating, again, post 9/11 sort of exploration of fanaticism. And I think that there's a really fascinating commentary there about, you know, what the results of that kind of fanaticism are.
It seems to be a combination of fanaticism and like tribal fanaticism, right? These are not just one extremist group. These are extremist groups that are kind of competing with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They're very much competing with one another. And the sad truth at the end, and I think it's a good warning for all of us out here in the real world, that type of fanaticism only ends one way. And unfortunately, the rivalry between these factions has caused the obliteration of their planet, and they're left with nothing but broken pieces. And I think it's a warning for us here on planet Earth, and, you know, that we have got to find a way to live in peace. And I think that it's important that we hold on to our beliefs, but at the same time, you know, we've got to discover ways to dwell together in peace, and to set aside our differences and find ways to communicate and work together for common good.
Yeah, it raises this whole host of related issues of diversity and tolerance and pluralism, and even the viability of religion, whether religion is something that leads to these, you know, disastrous human actions, or whether religion is part of the tolerance of diversity, that we have tolerance for people's religious beliefs, someone else's religious beliefs versus my religious beliefs, some group's religious beliefs versus this other group's religious beliefs. Do we embrace the diversity as something beautiful, almost in an aesthetic sense, or do we come together as people and celebrate those differences, or do we maintain this fear of each other about those differences? And, you know, and there's always the specter of each group wanting to be right as opposed to the beliefs of another group. And so, you know, there's no one answer to this, because I think these are really complicated, intricate issues, because you don't want to be so relativistic and just say everyone's all right, you know, regardless of what they believe. That's too radically pluralistic and too radically relativistic. So, you know, finding a way to balance the pluralism with the tolerance combined with critical thinking and you know, continuing to be self-reflective about which beliefs are more plausible based on evidence, as opposed to, you know, pure superstition or pure faith or pure you know, beliefs that have been handed down because of tradition. And so, you know, not sacrificing our critical thinking, but still having a recognition of the necessity and the desirability of pluralism and a diversity of beliefs that are out there.
Yeah, I found it fascinating that the prenom Dijamat, he referred to this war that he was fighting as a glorious mission. And Archer calls him on it. I mean, he said, you know, a war, you know, this is your glorious mission. And I think that, again, this is a commentary about, you know, the merits of finding ways to live peaceably and not necessarily letting go of your core beliefs, but, you know, really finding common ground and working towards common good. And I also think that there's a commentary in this episode about the value of life. And what greater ethical conversation can you have than that? You know, what is the value of life? Not only your own life, but, you know, the life of others around you, whether they are the same color you are, or from, you know, the same country you are, or have the same beliefs that you have. I mean, what is the value of life? And this episode really, in many respects, takes it on boldly. And I really appreciate that about this episode.
I think this episode really forces the issue about what our highest ideals are. You know, if your highest ideals are what is essentially a holy war, whether it's a, you know, Islamic jihad, or whether it's a, you know, Christian crusade, if that's the highest you can set your sights, you're missing something. That our ideals should be higher. Our ideals should be along the lines of tolerance and diversity and peace and learning from each other and making the world the best it can be, or the galaxy the best it can be in the Star Trek universe. And if, you know, I think this episode just paints, you know, whatever the local equivalent of holy war is in a fairly dark light.
Yeah. Archer says to Prenom Dijamat, you know, they're talking about this holy war that's going on. And Dijamat keeps referring to this opposing faction as heretics. And Archer asks him, you know, well, what is it that makes them heretics? And the response was, we believe that the makers created the chosen realm in 9 days. They believe it took 10. And I have to say, Zachary, that for me as a person of faith, this really hits hard, because in Christianity in particular, there are a lot of doctrinal differences between denominations. And those doctrinal differences have divided, in many respects, over you know, the many centuries, the Christian church. We've been divided over oftentimes really simple doctrinal differences. And I won't get into, you know, some of those differences, but, you know, suffice it to say that some of them are very minute and very small. But again, they've divided the Christian church. And so, as people who are looking from the outside see that, oftentimes they scoff at faith, at religion, for that reason. I mean, you guys all claim to follow the same guy, you know, this is, you know, Jewish Messiah. You all claim to follow him, and yet you can't agree on, you know, simple things. And I think in many respects, there's a commentary in there about that as well, that honestly, I think people of faith really, really need to sit up and listen to, because this is from the perspective of, let's say, science, looking in at religion and saying, listen, these superstitious beliefs that you have, you guys can't even agree on them. And, you know, you've gone to war and you've let these things divide you, and they scoff, just as Archer scoffs at Dijamat and his holy war. So I think there's an important message in there for people of faith.
I think the question of heresy is actually a really interesting issue, because, yeah, I think you rightly point out that from the outside, some of the minor doctrinal distinctions amongst you know, sects of the same religion look incredibly minor. they look inconsequential.
Yes.
I think the same is true if you look at mankind as a whole from the perspective of the outside. If you imagine an alien race coming to Earth for the first time, seeing mankind as a whole, seeing the minor differences from individual to individual and from group to group, they would say, this is all inconsequential. You're all human beings. You all have the same basic needs. You need food, you need shelter, you need, you know, higher order needs like friendship and relationships and, you know, satisfaction in life. Everyone needs these things. So there's no differences. What's the big deal? Why is everyone not getting along? So I think there's something to be said for not making a big deal over very minor minor differences within a religion. On the other hand, you know, if, you know, you use the example of a Christian doctrine, you do genuinely want to kind of exclude things that are genuine outliers, like Gnosticism as a genuine outlier that is a genuine difference from what other mainstream Christians believe, you know, back in ancient times as much as today. Those were genuine outliers, and you know, sort of Orthodox people rightly reject those and say, nope, that's not what we believe. We believe something substantively different from that. So we don't lump us in together. That is actually, from our point of view, heresy, you know, to overstate it a bit. It's at least different than what we think, whether it's, you know, not as correct, whether we judge them for it or whatnot. It's a whole can of worms. But I think you do want to be able to make qualitative distinctions and differences in beliefs from group to group and from sect to sect or from religion to religion. So, you know, what you don't want to do is say, well, you know, all religions basically say the same thing and all, you know, denominations within a religion say the same thing. And we're all, as humans, we're all basically equivalent to each other. That's vastly oversimplifying the genuine differences in beliefs from religion to religion to religion. So, you know, and that's the thing. If you do want to embrace diversity and tolerance, you have to come face to face with the fact that, well, there are substantive differences from religion to religion. They don't all, in fact, say the same thing. Even if they have similar ethical beliefs, their metaphysics and their views about the relationship between the divine and the human, or the human and the universal, to use a Star Trek term, they say very different things about those things. So they can't all be equivalent to each other. And in my mind, that just means they can't all be right. So that, you know, they can certainly all be wrong, but they can't all be right. And I think there's just a danger of oversimplifying, you know, in the name of diversity, in the name of tolerance, which are good virtues. They're important for getting along. They're important for embracing the multicultural, peaceful existence that we see in the Star Trek universe that we like to embrace. What you don't want to do is oversimplify and gloss over the genuine differences. You want to recognize them as genuine differences.
Sure. But my point being, from the outside looking in, you know, those can sometimes seem very minute. And in that respect, we allow very small things to divide us. Now, again, as you point out, you make a very important distinction there that oftentimes, you know, these are very qualitatively different ideas that, you know, do make a significant distinction between, for instance, denominations. However, that, you know, that being said, whether, you know, we agree doctrinally or not, there's common ground to be found. And I think that, again, it's important that we are able to discover that common ground.
And generally, we're okay with saying holy wars are bad, whether here in the real world or in the Star Trek universe.
Yes, like Jonathan Archer, we scoff at such ideas. I believe the next pick is yours, sir.
So my next pick, Mike, is a little counterintuitive. I'm curious whether it showed up on your list. I'm guessing it probably didn't, because I almost didn't put this on my list. My next pick is Episode 9, or North Star.
It's not on my list, but I love, love, love that episode. It's definitely on my list of favorite Enterprise episodes, but it's not on my list.
Since it's one of your favorites, and since you're so much better at giving synopses than I am, why don't you tell us just a bit about North Star?
Yeah, so the crew of Enterprise stumbles upon a planet inhabited by human beings who are victims of alien abduction, who have been taken to this planet originally as slave laborers, but their progeny rose up against the Skagarans and were able to obtain their independence, their freedom. And now they have put together a society, a culture of their own that is, you know, very Old West in style. And they now oppress the Skagarans and prohibit them from having full rights as the human beings in the settlement. And so the crew of Enterprise struggles with what to do with these humans.
So there's several reasons that I put this on my list. I think, first of all, I think it's only natural for any human being who is oppressed in one way or another to want to rise up, to overthrow, to rebel, to have a revolution, right? Any variety of those themes. But it raises the question of what the end goal is. Like, what is the point of a revolution? What's the point of an uprising? What's the point of trying to overthrow your oppressors? If the goal is to become an oppressor yourself, I think you're plausibly misunderstanding the purpose of a genuine revolution or a genuine sense of what the world could be. And it reminds me a bit of Nietzsche's master-slave dialectic. You know, in Nietzsche's mind, ethics and morality is a result of what he thinks of as like Jewish resentment, Jewish people historically being the slave race as part of their identity. In order to invert the power relationship and power structure, Nietzsche thinks they kind of invented Judeo-Christian morality in the sense of morally right and morally wrong, not just good or bad in the sense of powerful or unpowerful, not in the sense of being strong or being oppressed, but morally right in the sense of morally superior as a way of inverting the power relationship they were in. And so I sort of see this this issue of, you know, wanting to invert the power relationship and go from being the oppressed to in some way being the oppressor is as somewhat in line of Nietzsche's claim that this is a result of like resentment. It's reactiveness. It's not, if you immediately sort of find a way to invert the power relationship and find yourself being the oppressor now, because you've placed yourself in the superior position, you haven't freed yourself of this reactiveness of having been oppressed. So, you know, what for Nietzsche, it means something very different. He wants people to not, you know, focus on Judeo-Christian morality. He wants them to be, you know, strong individuals that have their own, you know, goals and their own aesthetic sense and, you know, plowing their own individualistic way. But here in Star Trek universe, I see it more like, you know, once you've managed to free yourself from being the oppressed, you have a responsibility not to become an oppressor yourself. You have a responsibility to think more universally in terms of freedom and liberty and rights and responsibilities and justice and peace. And if you're not thinking in those terms, mm-hmm. then you're being reactive and you run the risk of just becoming the oppressor yourself.
Yeah, and I really appreciate at the end of the episode how Archer is able to instill that reasoning into... in particular, the sheriff of the town, who really seems to be the leader of the town. He's kind of sheriff slash governor, mayor, whatever you would have it. And I really appreciate how he's able to sit down and reason with him and, you know, instill that idea into him. I don't think it's necessarily realistic. I just don't see... you know, a couple generations at least of, you know, that type of mentality changing, you know, with a conversation over cigar and whiskey. But I really value that at the end of the episode. And again, it's very Star Trek. So, you know, we have this kind of hopeful outlook at the end of the episode as, you know, she's able to teach the children openly and, you know, the sheriff joins in and, you know, they're able to have that conversation. I really appreciate that.
And I think this is a really important message for us today, because even though we're not, frankly, right now in the middle of our own American Revolution, we did that a couple hundred years ago, right?
Yeah.
Now, here we are a couple hundred years later. We won. We've become the dominant Western power, right? Given that, what do we do? Do we use that power and use that freedom and use that influence to help protect the rights of others? I think now we are seriously in danger of using that position to oppress people we don't like or people we don't agree with or people we're afraid of. And that is really sad, because, you know, I just see a better world where we use that influence to create the good things in this world and create the kind of egalitarian society that America was founded on. So I just see this as a very a stern warning for... frankly, aimed smack at Americans, right? Americans, you know, traditionally being viewed as the dominant Western power. You know, what do you do with that authority and that influence and that power? Do you use that influence to safeguard the rights of others and use that influence to help spread those ideals, or do you become fearful of losing your position and become an oppressor yourself? You know, before we know it, I think we're in danger of becoming the people against whom a future revolution will take place. And I think that's a very sad state of affairs.
I think it's an important message. So I think if this were an after-school special, it would be known as Don't Be a Bennings. That should be in the Star Trek Encyclopedia under bully. It's, you know, synonym Bennings.
Hey, you open it up. There's the picture right there. Okay, Mike, so we overlapped on similitude. You had Chosen Realm in your list. I had North Star on my list. What is your next pick for essential Trek philosophy from Season 3 of Enterprise?
Well, Zachary, you were correct. E squared is on my list. But I'm hesitant to talk too much about it because I know you and I are going to have a conversation on episode 53 of Metatrex coming up, listeners, next week for Children of Time. And there are some similarities between the Deep Space Nine episode Children of Time and E squared. And I think the obvious reason why I chose this episode is it's such a fascinating exploration of, you know, what if you could have a conversation, say, with your ancestors, even your progeny down, you know, go forward in time down the line. What if you could go back in time or forward in time and have, you know, have those kind of conversations, have those kind of interactions? What if there was a common purpose for which perhaps your distant relatives were able to come back in time to assist you? And I just find the whole thing very fascinating, the metaphysics of the whole thing. And time travel episodes, anyway, I get giddy over them. It's very not real deep. It's really kind of superficial, Zachary, but E squared is on my list, and the interactions in particular between Trip and his son, I think, are great. And I have to say that for anyone who does not think that Jolene Blaylock is a serious actor should watch this episode. She nails elderly T'Pol. I think it was a heck of an acting performance on her part, playing herself, her character aged.
Well, Mike, I have a little confession to make. Even though I might have led you to believe at the beginning of the episode that E squared was on my list, it was actually on my list only as an honorable mention. I didn't have it on my list of three essential Trek philosophy episodes. And why is that? I think, in my mind, it's not terribly philosophically rich in a strict, narrow sense. I find it a fascinating episode. You and I are both genealogy buffs. We like comparing notes on ancestors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Turns out you and I are probably distantly related, come to figure out. But that aside, it does raise some interesting issues for me that are not, I think, strictly philosophical, but still, you know, well within the meta wheelhouse of meta tracks, right? These are meta issues that aren't strictly speaking philosophical. I think one issue it raises is this idea, and it's easy to forget this. I think this is really important. It's easy to forget that we live in a multi-generational world, right? You know, I am a result of everything that came before me, my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents. In fact, every generation you go back, you have twice the number of ancestors. It's, before you know, mm-hmm. it's a massive number of people you're connected with. And it's interesting to me to see what values and what ideals, what character traits get passed down, whether as a result of biology or whether as a result of culture and family upbringing, right? What stories get passed down? What values get passed down? And I think it raises a parallel issue of what our responsibility is to future generations, given that there will be descendants and future humans that come after us. What's our responsibility to ensure their well-being? In our world, it could be in some sort of environmental sense. What's our responsibility to them in a culture sense, in terms of handing down our ideals and passing down stories, making sure they understand where they came from, just like I understand where I and we came from. So, again, that's not strictly speaking philosophical, and I think there is the issue of the duplicate enterprise. And that's fascinating and interesting. Great science fiction story, great mm-hmm. acting. One of my favorite Star Trek episodes, definitely one of my favorite episodes from Season 3 of Enterprise, but I had to only put it down as an honorable mention.
I agree. And I said so in my initial remarks on this episode that, you know, it's a little light, but I just couldn't overlook it. And for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons why I couldn't overlook it, there are a couple of predominant threads in this episode. One of them is to Paul's exploration of humanity. And she has unlocked emotion in her Trillium addiction. And that has become something I think that's very defining for her character. And she begins to explore those emotions. And she is able to have a conversation with her elder self. And in that episode, or rather in that conversation, the elder T'Pol tells her to follow her heart. And T'Pol says, what if I don't know what it wants? You know, what if my heart doesn't know what it wants? And, you know, T'Pol said, it will. In time, she says, it will. And so there's this exploration of her own feelings and her emotions. And there's something very deep and rich and philosophical about that. The other strong thread is with the character Lorien, who is the son of Trip and T'Pol on the second Enterprise. And, you know, I love, you know, Trip says, only in the expanse can I have a son that's three times my age. I love that line. But Lorien is dealing with emotions as well. He, after all, is half human. And the emotion of guilt has become very strong for him. He feels responsible because he swore to Captain Archer on his deathbed that he was going to stop the Zindi probe, and he failed to do that. And so now he is willing to stop at nothing in order to complete that mission. And T'Pol calls him on it, and she says, I know for humans that guilt can be a powerful motivator. And of course, you know, he tries to throw it back at her, you know nothing about being human, but she does, and she really calls him on this. And I think at the end of the day, Lorien needs to sit down and read some Marcus Aurelius, but I think the exploration of emotion as a motivator, as a really as something that that defines action. I think there's something very deep, very rich there that can be overlooked because of this great science fiction story that's being told.
And of course, in addition to all of that, there are the issues of time travel paradoxes and causal loops and, you know, the just general science fiction, you know, metaphysics of time and space and causation issues that you get in any sort of story like this, you know, where you know, something exists and then it gets undone and never really happened. And all of these time travel stories are kind of bound together as philosophically interesting from the metaphysics of time standpoint. Again, I'm not sure this episode adds anything really unique there. And that's another reason that E-Squared really made my honorable mentions list. I think if you're looking for a story like that, I think there are probably better stories that draw out the metaphysics of time travel paradox aspect of the story, of that kind of storytelling. But nonetheless, it's a great episode. I loved it. It definitely had to put it on my list somewhere. I just didn't think of it as strictly speaking philosophical.
Okay. So that being said, what is your third pick on your list?
Okay. So I really struggled, Mike, to know which to place as my third and final pick for Essential Trek Philosophy from Season 3 of Enterprise. I was faced between choosing one episode that I think of as philosophically interesting on its own, or three other episodes that are definitely related to the Zindi arc and related to the overall theme of Season 3 of Enterprise. So that said, I decided to go with the one-off episode as my final pick for Essential Trek Philosophy from Season 3 of Enterprise. My third pick is Episode 8, or Twilight.
Love it. It's one of my honorable mentions.
So the reason I picked Twilight, if you remember, this is the episode where Captain Archer can't form any new long-term memories. Mm-hmm. It highlights the role of memory and personal identity. You know, if you ask the question, why are you the same person as who you were yesterday or the day before that or the year before that, it's because you have this continuum of memories. I have this continuous experience of having been that person. It's somewhat cumulative, right? And if you cease the ability to form new long-term memories, you can plausibly say that there's a gap in terms of your memory. Like, you know, there's a disconnect between who you are now and who you were sometime in the past if you're not able to form those long-term memories. So are you that individual, or are you disconnected connected, a substantively distinct individual, because you've have a discontinuous memory experience now, mm-hmm. as opposed to a continuous memory experience. So I don't have much to say about this episode. I think that is in itself is an interesting philosophical concept worthy of discussion if you're talking about personal identity and the role of memory. So I chose that as my final pick. In fact, as I was watching this episode, it reminds me, have you ever seen the movie 50 First Dates with Adam Sandler and Drew
yeah,
Barrymore?
That's a great movie.
It reminds me of 10 Second Tom inside that movie. So when I see Twilight in Enterprise, I think of Jonathan Archer as 10 Second Archer or 10 Second Jonathan. He can't form any long-term memories. Like, hi, I'm Jonathan. Oh, nice to meet you. I'm Jonathan. So that's the reason I put this on the list. The role of personal identity and memory is an important topic for who we are as we change over time, as we our personality traits come and go, and as we get new experiences and our memories change, you know, what accounts for the persistence of our identities and ourselves over time despite those changes. And this issue really raises all of those issues, or this episode really raises all of those issues for me.
As I mentioned, Zachary, this was one of my honorable mentions, and I'm always fascinated by alternate reality stories. There's something really interesting, I think, about exploring alternate realities and alternate timelines. And we've kind of discussed this before. Well, actually, we've discussed it quite a bit here on the podcast and previous episodes of Metatreks. But I always find these ideas, just very fascinating. And sometimes to the point that it almost makes my head hurt when I think about the possibilities.
Bach is fond of saying, I like to think that there always are possibilities.
You know, every decision kind of having a possibility, you know, as we've talked before, you know, do I warp off to Ryza or do I go to the neutral zone? And each of them come with, you know, potential consequences. And so I watched this episode and I have one of those, you know, really fun thought experiments going on as I watch. And so for that reason, I'm glad you mentioned personal identity, because I really didn't identify this episode as being one of personal identity, but you're absolutely right. It is really in many respects a major theme, not just for Jonathan Archer, but you know, what his own crisis, if you will, has done to change other characters in this episode. And you know, of course, on a personal note, I always mourn anytime they destroy Enterprise, and they really gave it a beating in this episode. So I'm glad that was on your list, and I really appreciate your take on personal identity.
Don't worry, Mike. History will never forget the name Enterprise.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, just to recap, Zachary, you and I both had similitude on our list. I had Chosen Realm. You picked North Star. I had E Squared. And your final pick was episode 8 of season 3, Twilight. So let's go to a lightning round of honorable mentions, shall we?
Okay, Mike, if we're doing a lightning round, I'm going to get my three honorable mentions out of the way really quickly because they're all related to each other. I picked episode 4, or Regine, because that deals with the issues of preemptive strikes and bioweapons and the role of preemptive strikes in a sort of global warfare situation. So definitely ties in with the theme of season 3. It's related to, I mean, anytime there's a society is worried about, whether it's terrorism or whether it's a future war, it raises the possibility of, well, we can minimize the damage if we do a preemptive strike. So let's consider that as an option. I think, you know, it's definitely relevant to the post September 11th era. It's relevant to us today, and it's going to be relevant to any society that's facing a war. So I think that's one of my picks. But related to that, I picked episode 15, or Harbinger.
Okay.
And I picked that because it raises the issue of militarism. you know, the conflict between Mako's as a militaristic organization and Starfleet as a explorative, scientific, you know, diplomatic organization, the conflict and tension that arises there is going to arise again in any society where you have a specter of war or terrorism, where there's fear of what's coming in the future. There's a tendency to want to militarize, to protect yourselves and to prevent future harm. And then what's the role of militarism in society as a whole? In a democratic society like ours, what's the role of militarism? That's an important role. Do we have a militaristic society with a militaristic commander in chief where we go out and act militaristically in the world? Is that what we do? Or do we keep militarism in check for more democratic ideals? And so, again, very relevant to the post-September 11th era. It's relevant to any society that's having problems or is facing a war or facing terrorism or is in fear of, you know, future events or of other groups. So very, again, just in line with the overall theme of season three of Enterprise. And the last of my three honorable mentions is episode 19, or Damage. And again, it's on a very similar theme. In this episode, Archer is forced to steal a warp coil, which he cites as a necessity of war. And again, the overall theme of season three is, well, how far do we go? What trade-offs are we willing to make for the sake of preventing war, for protecting ourselves, for protecting our citizens, for preventing future terrorist attacks, or preventing harm to society as a whole? What individual actions become okay when looked at from that perspective, this consequentialist perspective of preventing harm for a greater number of people? And this episode raises that very basic consequentialist issue. And again, it's perfectly in line with the post 9/11 or post September 11th theme and overall story arc of season three of Enterprise.
I had actually four honorable mentions, and of course we've already discovered, Zachary, that one of my honorable mentions was Twilight. Also, Damage was one of my honorable mentions as well. And I, like you, that whole idea of how far is too far. And I think this is not just an interesting topic philosophically, but the episode itself is definitely in one of my, you know, it's definitely on my top list of Star Trek episodes. In fact, I went on to try to tell sort of the rest of the story. I think there's a really interesting story there that could be told about the Illyrians in that episode. Also on my honorable mention list is the episode from season three, number three, which is Extinction. Now, when you talk about personal identity, this is one that I associated with personal identity. Archer, Reed, and Hoshi Sato are all being transformed by a retrovirus that is changing them into another species and completely rewriting their DNA. And I think that's very fascinating. Again, talking about personal identity, that was the thread there that I caught on to. You know, what does that mean to not just have, in as in the case of Twilight, your memory altered or changed or inhibited in some way, but we are completely creating a new species from them. We are completely changing not just who they are, but what they are.
You know, it's interesting, Mike. I actually had episode three, Extinction, very nearly on my list of honorable mentions. I decided to cut it kind of at the last minute, but I had it on the list for a different reason. I kind of put it on the list because it raises the issue of what to do to quarantine an epidemic. You know, you have to kind of balance the overall good of the population as a whole versus the rights of the individual. And so insofar as they need to quarantine this disease, this epidemic that you've been describing, this raises the issue of the greater good versus individual rights that you're going to get in any sort of epidemic story.
Well, Zachary, the last honorable mention that I have is from season three, obviously episode five, and that is Impulse. And did you say that was almost on your list as well?
Yeah, I'm so glad you put Impulse on your list. This was actually on my first draft of the list as I was preparing for the show today, but I decided to cut it as I whittled my list down. The reason I put it on my list, again, it raises the issue of the role of emotions for Vulcans in particular. Mm-hmm. And I think the comparison or the juxtaposition of emotions and drugs in this episode is fascinating, because here for us humans, oftentimes we'll think of drugs as causing an altered state of consciousness which causes destructive emotions and causes destructive behavior. And it just struck me as interesting that for the Vulcans, it's actually kind of the other way around, that a heightened state of emotion can cause a drug-like state.
Yes.
And so it's almost a backward reciprocal relationship to the way it works for humans. And I just found that remarkably interesting. Again, I cut it because I didn't find it terribly, strictly speaking, philosophically interesting. It does raise the issue of the role of emotions and the causal relationship between, you know, altered states of consciousness and substances and emotions is interesting and complex, and I don't know enough about it to really speak too intelligently about it. So I do find it interesting, but again, strictly speaking, is that philosophical for me? It was less important as other things in this season, so I decided to cut it from my list. But I did find that particularly interesting in the way that emotions and drugs get juxtaposed and compared and the relationship between them in this episode.
Yeah, I did as well. That is a very fascinating juxtaposition. And as I watch this episode, and even as I rewatch this episode, I think about the role of emotion or the lack thereof in a Vulcan's life, and how emotion has completely disrupted this species to the point, you know, that they become very zombie-like and very primal. In fact, I won't go into a great discussion because, again, it's an honorable mention, but I had an opportunity a while back to join Christopher Jones in the Ready Room to talk about this episode, and that is Ready Room 205, entitled Disco Vulcan Zombies. And that's exactly how I see them. Disco Vulcan zombies, with all the flashy lights and the walking. It's very much a horror flick, but a really fascinating exploration, I think, into just exactly who the Vulcans are and what role their suppression of emotion plays in their lives. I think there is something really rich and philosophical there. The episode doesn't really go very deep into that exploration. You're actually left in many respects, and why it didn't end up on my main list is because I just don't think they explored it enough. You almost have to draw from other strong Vulcan episodes of Star Trek in order to fill in the blanks. So again, Zachary, to just summarize our lists, and then we'll go to final thoughts. Our list of essentials: Similitude, Chosen Realm, North Star, E-Squared, Twilight. Honorable mentions: Rajin, Harbinger, Damage, and Extinction. That, listeners, is Enterprise Season 3 Essential Trek Philosophy. Final thoughts, Zachary?
Well, I think it's not an overstatement to say that Season 3 of Enterprise is absolutely dominated by the Zindi story arc and the post-9/11 era. That said, I was really, frankly, surprised at how long of a list I started out with. I really had to whittle this list down. And sometimes I'm finding the exact opposite to be true for these Essential Trek Philosophy episodes that we do on MetaTrek. I often find my list is too short, and I have to kind of go hunting and pecking and digging a little deeper to find that those extra philosophically interesting episodes. But here, I think we were blessed with an abundance of philosophical interest. So the challenge here was to whittle it down. Again, the season is overall dominated by those two things I mentioned, the Zindi arc and the post 9/11 era, but there are some one-off gems like Twilight and Similitude that made my list. So I'm really, what do I want to say? I would say overall I have newfound appreciation for Season 3 of Enterprise. This is a season I don't go back to very often. The Zindi arc did not really resonate with me, so I had to make extra special effort to rewatch some of these Season 3 Enterprise episodes, the episodes I wouldn't normally have gone back to as a result of my rewatches. But again, I have newfound appreciation for the season, so job well done.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, the difficulty was going through and really finding episodes that resonated philosophically, because there are so many of these episodes that are really favorites of mine. And again, I'm not one of those fans who, you know, just didn't care for the Zindi arc. I actually find this season really stimulating in a lot of ways. I think they tell some really good stories. The overall arc, I think, is really an interesting one, especially as you reminisce and think back on, you know, the immediate post 9/11 world that we were living in. But additionally, I think they told some really good one-off stories. And as I mentioned, you know, North Star and being one of my favorites. I love that line, Zachary. There's nothing like a barber shave to make a man feel civilized. Did I do that pretty good?
That was pretty good, yeah.
I love it.
You better look out. They're going to cast you in Discovery if you're not careful.
But in similitude, and they're really some of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, Carpenter Street, Zero Hour. You know, anytime we pull Daniels in, things really get interesting, I think, in Enterprise. So there's some really strong episodes, Stratagem. I can go on and on of really good episodes of Star Trek in season three. But the challenge here was to find episodes that resonated philosophically. And I think we did a pretty good job, I think, finding episodes and making a case for, you know, some of the stronger philosophical themes within this third season. But again, it's difficult to appreciate it episode by episode. This is one of those seasons of Star Trek that you almost have to binge watch to really appreciate, I think, in a lot of ways, the overall story arc and the story that they were telling. So, yeah, job well done. I think we've put a good list together for our listeners as they're exploring Enterprise, either for the first time or going back and looking at it again.
I just have one remaining question, Mike, as we're wrapping up the show today. If Captain Archer in Twilight is 10-second Tom or 10-second John or 10-second Archer, if you and I were 10-second Zach and 10-second Mike, is there a danger that we're going to start this whole episode of Metatrex over again? Like, hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 52 of Metatrex.
I don't know about this one, but we've certainly had episodes where it felt that way.
Just kidding. We're actually wrapping up. We're not starting over.
In this episode, listeners, we'll be talking about... No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, 10-second Mike. It's enough of that. Well, Mike, it's been a lot of fun talking about Season 3 of Enterprise here on Essential Trek Philosophy on Metatrex. But Season 3 of Enterprise isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So it counts as saving Earth, even though they really didn't do anything. They just kind of observed history, right? If anything,
they were part of it, though. They wound up being part of it, right? They probably, well, in many ways, they interfered with the saving of Earth.
Right, yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, they saved the day despite themselves.
Earl Grey.
I just, this week with my students, I'm a teacher, and what is so great about Star Trek? And isn't it like Star Wars? And I'm like, no, it is not. Let me tell you why. And that's always where I start. It's like, Star Trek, this is where we could be. It is someplace where we could end up going. You know, who knows? But it's our timeline. It's our potential future.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
We had many Ferengi, and they were all quite different. Nog and Rom and Brunt and Quark and the Grand Nagus and Moogie, they all had very different voices, very different worldviews. They were all characters in their own right, but they all fit into that culture.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly, and it makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network through Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all of the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and many more. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The NSS Enterprise Orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and you can help make it happen. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. If you'd like to contact us with feedback or suggestions for the show, or to send us your thoughts on anything we discussed in this episode of MetaTreks, you can contact us in several different ways. You can contact us via a form on Trek FM's website. Just go to trek.fm/contact.
You can also leave us a voicemail. Just look in the sidebar on the show page, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm.
On Twitter, we are under the handle @trekfm.
And you can also visit us over on Facebook. It's facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, be sure to check out the Babel Conference. That's our Trek FM listeners-only discussion group. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. Or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar.
We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of MetaTreks on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Well, Mike, when you are not having coffee with your mimetic duplicate, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network these days?
Well, Zachary, I can always be found on Facebook. That's where I'm most active. Certainly on Twitter, at cmichael1701 is my handle. And I'm also on Instagram, cmichael1701. And Zachary, when you're not struggling to recover lost memories, where can our listeners find you on Trek FM and around the interwebs?
Well, if you are dying to hear more of me on Trek FM, you can now hear me as one third of the co-hosting team of the new To the Journey Trek FM show on everything Star Trek Voyager. In addition to that show, you can find me on several recent episodes of The Ready Room, Trek FM's flagship show. If you want to get in touch with me on Facebook, you can find me in the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group, and you can find me on Twitter. My handle there is just my name, at Zachary Fruehling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, and Fruehling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the MetaTreks team from the network. Specifically, we'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, our executive producers, Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager. And we'd like to give a special thank you and a shout-out to our two associate producers for MetaTreks. We'd like to thank Patrick Devlin. You can find Patrick under the Twitter handle at MagicDrop5. And we'd like to thank Kay Shaw. And if you're curious, you can find Kay Shaw co-hosting To the Journey, Trek FM's Voyager show with me each and every week. And you can find Kay under the Twitter handle at ChocoWeeble. Well, everyone, thanks for listening to MetaTreks, a Star Trek philosophy podcast. Until next time, when we will once again boldly go where no philosophers have gone before.